This is Scott Berguin of KSWLP in Cottage Grove, Oregon. We are checking back with folks from the Troop Home Fast, a group that's fasting in Washington, D.C. And this evening we have Mary Brassell on the line. She is from California, but currently in Washington, D.C., of course, from Code Pink, and also an alternative, an indie media group called Media Edge. Hello, Mary.
Hello, Scott. Nice to talk with you tonight.
Yeah, thank you. Well, let's start right off by sharing with us where you are at in your fast, how many days, what your situation is.
Well, I'm on day 6, and I feel wonderful, but we were fortunate enough that those some of us who are in long-term fasters are kind of clustered in an area in two different houses, those of us that don't live here in the Washington and D.C. area. And so we've built this marvelous community, and it's pretty exciting to be with such strong people from all over the United States who are really committed to this and take it seriously. So, but yet our lives are full of a lot of, fun and also serious work.
All right. How many of you are there that are now on your 6th day? So, that, in other words, have fasted from the beginning.
Right here in this house, we've got 8 people, but there's far more than that. We have over 3,000 altogether all over the country, and
right.
Every day somebody walks up and says they're on a full fast. And somebody came today, and he's been on a fast since the 1st of June.
Oh, really?
And he heard we were going to do it, but he started early just kind of practicing and then said, why not keep going? So
oh,
we have people emailing us and saying, we're on the full fast with you. But they're from all over the country. So that's our little crew. But then the larger Washington area, I know there's probably 25, 30 that have shown up over the 6 days that I've been here.
Okay, well, Mary, what was your personal inspiration or motivation, whatever, for deciding to join this fast?
Throughout my life, I've seen people who have fasted for various reasons, especially in political situations, and I think it's just a powerful tool. Before Code Pink had actually planned this, I had often thought about just doing it, and I thought, well, what would one person do? You know, what can one person fasting? They let you just stay there and die probably in front of the White House and never notice.
Yes.
And, never care. And that kind of changed as Code Pink put this out, and I talked with other people involved because there's been enormous successes of people doing this and making really drastic changes. And I think it's not that hard to do, and we're kind of supporting and watching out for each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I think because we're doing it in a community of people together, it's an easy place to do it. And I think that the other part of it is, recently Code Pink brought through the United States a group of women from Iraq, and in California we were fortunate enough to have this wonderful woman, Faiza Alaraji. And she stayed with me for a couple of days and then went and did some other work and then came back. And just hearing what it was like to have life in Iraq under the bombing, when her son was kidnapped, daily life, kids throwing a rock at a tank or a gun going off in a neighborhood, and the next day the U.S. Army coming in, surrounding the whole neighborhood, dragging out every male from age 6 to 96 and hauling them off. Just those kinds of daily harassment experiences where people are disappeared or found in the morgue or never heard of again, or maybe if somebody has some money left can get bought out, are pretty horrific. And the rumble of the tanks and the deprivation of electricity and water and how it impacts her as a woman with a family in Iraq was pretty strong. And I got to the point where not even the media were all talking. We're all talking. Most of the people in the United States are against this. Even here on the Mall in D.C., majority of the people that go by, even the majority of the people in the parade when we kind of snaked in and crashed the parade here on the 4th of July are in our favor. And so why haven't we stopped it? And what will it take, I guess, is the question. So
right.
This is the next step for many of us.
Right. So what do you think? What do you think it's going to take? What's your... I mean, I'm not assuming that you would know or that any of us really know, but Obviously, you and others, many of us believe that this the tactic, I guess you could call it. It seems so cold to call it a tactic, but the this hunger strike is something that is needed right now and will hopefully move us along and move our fellow citizens along in a raising of awareness here.
I don't know if this is what it will take, but maybe this will change some people along the way that then will make the next change that needs to happen. I think it's an institutional problem. I think our government is set up on certain principles that involve empire and aggression and occupation and wars and total disregard for human beings, you know, from the very setting up of it with the people that were originally here that we basically did genocide with to various points in history, you know, during my lifetime. Things like the Japanese internment camps, the bombing in Japan that we're, you know, going to commemorate again in August. You know, you could just, slavery. I mean, we seem to be able to feel that it's okay to deal with all whole groups of people as subhuman. You don't count if we want your land, your riches, your resources, whatever we want. And till that gets changed. And so I guess we have to stop supporting in any way, shape, or form any candidates that don't do that if we're serious about making the change.
Right. Well, I can tell you that out here in Oregon, over the weekend, in fact, yesterday, there's a thing called the Oregon Country Fair, which is just kind of a wild celebration that's been going on for a lot of years. But Amy Goodman was there yesterday. We went and listened to her speak, and oh, she's an amazingly powerful speaker. But she did mention the Troops Home Fast and you all several times through two different presentations that she did. So, you know, people know about you. Obviously, I suppose it's not surprising that Amy Goodman knows about it.
Well, last week she had some of our people on.
Right.
She had some footage on that I shot of the young vet that was arrested when he tried to join the parade.
He was arrested when he tried to join the 4th of July parade?
Yes. During the 4th of July parade, at one point, they had things like Army helicopters. They had all kinds of Army units. Before that, it was lots of floats and different groups. And they had these large, giant helicopters and other military equipment going down the street. There were GIs in the equipment. And he said, I'm a vet. I should join the parade. But he was with us. And he had a shirt on saying Iraq Vets Against the War. And so when he went in, when he started to go in the first time, they just picked him. They picked him up and dragged him back to the curb. And when he said, no, I need to be in there. I'm a vet. I have the right to be there. They pulled up a paddy wagon and threw him in. And then one of the people in our group, who was 71 years old, said, you can't take him alone. I won't let that young man go along and just put her, you know, went right up to be arrested.
Oh, my.
And so that's actually on DC Indie Media right now. You can see the videotape of it and the story also. So it's interesting how frightening it is just to have people with T-shirts that express a different opinion. To the, you know, police presence here in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, it seems to be coming all too common, doesn't it, from the people back in the last election cycle that wore not even, I don't think they're even anti-Bush T-shirts, but pro-Democratic candidate T-shirts underneath their shirts were thrown out of Bush rallies
to
I mean, there's a lot of these kinds of incidents happening right now. I want to also ask you, Mary, because you mentioned before we started, before we came on air here, your work back in California. I think that that's an important piece here that people should hear about. Could you tell us again about Media Edge and the process that happened with that?
First of all, during the day, I'm a junior high teacher in Media Edge, so is my passion.
All right.
It takes up all but about 4 hours of sleep a night. So anyway, I'm the official reporter from there. No. What we do with Media Edge and how it got started was after the last non-election, people in Sacramento who were in various progressive groups got together in a large meeting, and then we decided what kind of areas we felt we could do really effective work to turn things around. And some people chose to find radical candidates that would really present a progressive view and a different view. Some people chose working with local school boards about recruitment and local, you know, we have a MEP center there, one of the induction centers, and I went into the group that decided that maybe media was a thing we should create on our local public access show. And so in Sacramento, you have to buy the space on the public access station because they have so little funding because it's continually cut by the federal government. And so we did that, and some of us had cameras, and some of us had a little bit of knowledge about editing, and some were already photographers, and a whole group that said, well, we don't know how to do either one of those things, but we'll leaflet and we'll flyer and we'll help you in whatever ways we can, got together, and we started a show called Media Edge, and the website is WeTheMedia.tv, and we've been on about a year and a half now. And we bought a two-hour block because we said eventually we'll be able to do this. And at the beginning, we figured, you know, that wouldn't be that hard to do. But now that we're doing editing, and some of our programs have actually gotten national awards already, now that we've begun doing that, and you can see that on the website, we realize how many hours go into editing. And so we started with maybe a half hour of local news. You know, locally produced news and an hour and a half of other things that we got from Free Speech or Link TV or other friends that have made documentaries or some of the more publicized kind of documentaries we call and get permission to show them on our show to fill in the other section. And as that developed, our block got larger and larger. And there was a small group that did something, a lot of short pieces just about local issues, and that was called Chew on This, and it comes on once a month with several pieces that have local issues. And the thing that happened once we went on the air, people liked it so much that we're now on five stations around us, and we keep getting mail from all over the country asking for our show, except we're at the point where we have to figure out who's going to do that and who's going to pay for mailing out all those DVDs or whatever people need.
Yeah.
So it's growing. There's a need for it. People write us all the time. We get great positive comments. And I think there's a thirst for it. And, you know, we bring in interns. We bring new graduates from Davis, you know, the film school at Davis. And we're trying to, you know, broaden who's doing all the work. And we're bringing in sections, other segments. There's a segment that has been on our public access station called Focus on the Middle East. Ayad Alkazaz is the host of it, an Iraqi professor and Arab scholar. And he interviews people from his community and who come through Sacramento. And that's another element we're adding in. So it's becoming more and more our show, you know, all 2 hours of it. So it's gotten to be kind of exciting. And the response has been marvelous. And we've learned how to fundraise to get some of the equipment. Most of us donate all of our own stuff and buy new stuff whenever we need it. And we found ways to go and show, you know, films at the local progressive theaters and raise some money for equipment we might need or, you know, web space, you know, funding or whatever things we need. And it's kind of just evolved and grown because we believe so passionately that this kind of information needs to get out. And the other elements that's grown out of Media Edge is we started bringing speakers in that usually only go to San Francisco or L.A., and we now have a pretty good reputation, and so people are calling us to come through, and that's pretty exciting. We're producing, you know, major events with people like Dar Jamal, Jeremy Scahill, Amy Goodman came through. We've had Michael Ratner about the war. We've had the Colonel Yee, who was the Major Yee, I guess, that was the chaplain. We've had Alfred McCoy, who wrote the book on torture. I can go on and on, but we've had many people come through. And then we put them through our junior college system. We have both Ayad at Sac State and then Riyad Bahur, a Palestinian teacher at our city college in Sacramento, and they open up the classes in Middle Eastern studies and the journalism classes and some other classes for students to be able to meet these people. And so we run, you know, a program where they go through and meet the young people in our town. We also have a huge demonstration that goes on, and it's a growing guerrilla theater thing that grew out of this. That's enormous. I mean, for us, it's enormous. Maybe 300 people each time it turns out. and there's theater pieces and, you know, capoeira groups and huge numbers of flags and original posters, and we've got, you know, just a number of huge kind of like political shock art pieces that are there, and it happens on the corners, and it happens during art time in Art Town when we have on the second Saturday various all of our art galleries open. We now have an element that uses that as a vehicle for new people to see what's happening.
My gosh, I'm overwhelmed. That is
determined.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Tell everyone again, it's Media Edge, and they can view it on the web at what?
It's wethemedia.tv.
Wethemedia.tv. Okay, that's simple enough. Okay, well, I think I've probably taken enough of your time, and I really appreciate it. Appreciate not only your time, but, you know, on this interview, but the time you're giving, the commitment you're making out there in D.C. I wish you the best.
Well, your audience can join in one day of fasting. We have people rolling fast.
Right.
You know, that one person takes each day of the month, and you've got a month of fasting. People have suggested go without electricity one day. That's what the people of Iraq do all the time.
Oh, wow.
You know, if you're a diabetic, or if you, you know, it's hard for you to go without food for a period of time. You know, there's a variety of things people can do.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, email us at our web at Code Pink and tell us what you're doing, and, you know, that boosts us. I mean, when we were at 3,000 people around the world, it was really exciting, and now on a daily basis more are joining,
right,
explaining what they're doing, and they're very creative in their community.
Mm-hmm. Well, very good. I interviewed somebody earlier today. There's an ongoing group doing the fast, a rolling fast in Corvallis, Oregon. And they are right from day one. They started on July 4th along with the rest of you, and they are very into it and doing multiple things with it, which is really good to hear. So we'll have a good rest of the day 6, and the best to you for day 7 and beyond.
Well, thank you so much for calling us and checking in on us. We appreciate that.